Morning. Today's Daf Pesachim Peches. We are on Pesachim and Bibes. We are three lines on the bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the words V'hainu Derebi Alexandria. Gemara yesterday launched us into the eighth parak of the Masechta. The Mishnah started off with Minui Karban Pesach, a registration of her Karban Pesach. Talked about a wife having her husband Shecht Karban Pesach for her father having Shecht Karban Pesach for who? Where does her loyalty lie? Where should it lie? The Mishnah actually doesn't tell us where it should lie, but it's kind of intuitive. It's obvious. She should be with her husband. But at the same time, however, for that first yantav, the Mishnah says that she could choose. She could choose between her father's Karban Pesach or her husband's Karban Pesach. And the Mishnah gives us a number of other scenarios where a person had multiple people shechting Karban Pesach on their behalf. And whose Karban Pesach do they participate in? And we're going to come back to the Mishnah. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara yesterday was mostly Agadata. After a short discussion in the Gemara yesterday regarding the Mishnah, the Gemara launched into a lot of Agadata. Yesterday's daf mostly revolved around the first two prakim of Hosea, where the psukim over there describe Hosea marrying a prostitute and having children with her, two boys and a girl. And what was the purpose of all that? What was the lesson that Hosea needed to learn? So that was a big part of yesterday's daf. And then at the end of yesterday's daf, on Peizanim at Beis, so the Gemara discussed why exactly we were sent into Galus Bavel, meaning we were sent into Galus after Churban Bayis Rishon, but why specifically Bavel? The Gemara gave, I counted it up, five different reasons in terms of why we specifically were sent to Bavel. Rav Elazar, this is just a quick recap of yesterday. Rav Elazar says that the reason why we were sent into Galus is so that we would attract Gerim. To come and to join us, right? That was a really interesting position. We're not a proselytizing nation, and yet, according to Rabbi Elazar, that's why we went into Galus. Although that doesn't really specifically explain Bavel, but that was the sheet of Rabbi Elazar. The second explanation of the Gemara is that we would be scattered. The whole purpose of being sent into Galus, well, the whole purpose. After Churban Bayis Rishon, so the Jews were scattered all over the world. The Gemara's language was Pazer, and that would be so that there's no one nation that could destroy us while we're in Galus. And that was a discussion that took place amongst the Roman dignitaries, the Roman senators, as the Gemara pointed out yesterday. A third explanation of the Gemara is that specifically Galus, because we couldn't handle Edom, right? To be sent to Edom, Edom would just simply be too cruel, and for that period of historical time, so we're not going to be sent to Edom, but specifically Galus, because we couldn't handle Edom. A fourth explanation of the Gemara is that we basically were sent back to our motherland, meaning Avram Avinu comes from Orkazdim. Orkazdim is presumably Bavel, and so we were sent back to our motherland, and that is where we're picking it up. In this fourth explanation, the fifth is upcoming. We're going to see that in just a moment. But the fourth explanation that we were sent back to our motherland, and that's why specifically we were sent to Bavel. So, Hainu de Rabbi Alexandria. So, this is exactly consistent with what was taught by Rabbi Alexandria. De Amar Shlosha Chazul Limat Asan. So, he's of the position that three things return back to its roots. Elohein, and they are, you saw the Jewish people, Kesef Mitzrayim, the money from Egypt, and Ksav Luchos, and the writing of the Luchos. Yisrael HaDamar. So the fact that the Jewish people were sent back to its roots, so that is the Jewish people after being kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, going back to Bavel, which is our roots. We came from Bavel. Avram Avinu came from Bavel. Number two, Kesef Mitzrayim Dechzi Vayi B'shnas HaChamishis L'melech Rechavan Ala Shishak Melech Mitzrayim Al Yushalayim V'gomer. So as far as the money is concerned, so we know that we left Egypt with a lot of money. Kesef Azav, silver and gold. Right? The Pasuk says, Rashi here quotes it, V'yinatzlu Es Mitzrayim. Right, we literally plundered. We exploited Egypt. We took all the money out. Kadosh Baruch Hu told us to do so. However, as the Gemara here is telling us, that money went back to Mitzrayim. Years later, during the Malucha of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, so Shishak, the king of Mitzrayim, came back and he plundered and he took back the money from the Jewish people. Ksav Luchos. The third thing that went back back to its sources, Dichsiv Vashbareim Leinechem. So Tana Luchos Nishbur Vosios Perchos. What broke? So the only thing that Moshe broke was the actual Luchos themselves. But the Ksav, so that went back up, it floated back up and went back to its source. Ula Amar, we are now up to the fifth explanation of the Gemara in terms of why exactly we were sent back to Bavel, as we are ready to turn to today's Daf Peches Amad Aleph. Ula Amar Kadesh Yochlu Tamayim V'yaska B'Torah. So it happens to be that in Bavel, so there are a lot of dates. And dates over here can literally mean dates, of course. But it just simply means that the life is easier in Bavel, and so therefore it'll give us more opportunity to learn Torah. And the Gemara tells us the following episode. Ula ikla le Pumbedisa. So Ula went to Pumbedisa. Krivuli turina de tamare. And they gave him a basket of dates. Amalahu kama. And he wanted to know how much was this basket of dates. Kihani bezuza. So how am I going to get for one zuza? I'm relayed klas bezuza. So he was informed that he was going to get three baskets for one date. Sorry. Three baskets of dates for one zuz. So Amr, so his response is, Malotzina de Dufsha Bezuzo, Vavlai Loaska Ba'araisa, and he could not believe it. Meaning, this is how cheap the cost of living is here in Bavel, and I'm going to get three baskets for one zuz, and the Jews here in Bavel are not learning Torah, and he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that life was so easy, and yet the Jews in Bavel are just wasting their time. Okay. We live in America, in a world of luxury, right? It's believable. But okay, it's a challenge. It's a challenge of wealth. So anyway, Balaila Tzarua. But the Gemara has a funny end note to the story, and that is that he ate a lot of dates, and that night his stomach is really unsettled. So Amar, so then he changed his tune, and he says, Malot Tzame Sama Demavsa Bezuza Bebavel Uvavlai Aska Be'araisa. So that's not dates, that's poison. Obviously, he's speaking hyperbolically, but he says, it just didn't sit well with me. He had bad stomach cramps the whole night. And he says, and I'm really now impressed, meaning that this is my reaction to the dates in Bavel, and I'm sleepless tonight, and I'm so impressed that the Jews here are learning Torah. Okay, Amar Rav Elazar, my dichsiv. Okay, a little bit more Agadata in just a short amount. We're going to come back to our Mishnah, but just two more points of Agadata. Rav Elazar says, the pasuk says, V'halchu amim rabim, v'amr luchu v'nala el har Hashem al beis Elokei Yaakov. So in the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu, so the Navi gives a forecast that in the future there is going to be a gathering in. All the nations are going to come in, and they're going to daven by the Beis HaMikdash. And the Navi Yeshayahu describes it as Beis Elokei Yaakov. It's the house of the God of Yaakov. Now the obvious point that the Gemara highlights over here is, which of the Avos now are we attributing to the area of the Beis HaMikdash? So, okay, Yaakov, okay, Abraham, Yitzchak, Ella, Loka from Shekasu Bohar, Shenamar. Now, as far as each one of them having a moment in the area, in the Makom HaMikdash, so each one of them gives it a different description. Abraham describes it one way, as does Yitzchak and Yaakov, and the Gemara now goes on to describe how each one of them saw it, and the Gemara is basically going to say that Yaakov's view of the area of the Beis HaMikdash is the most enduring view. And then Hashanamar, as far as Avram is concerned, he saw it as a mountain, right? Otherwise known as the Kedesh Yitzchak. Asher Yamar Ayom Bahar Hashem Yera'eh. So good. So Kedesh Yitzchak, which took place in the Makom HaMikdash. So that was to Avram Avinu, it looked like a mountain. It looked like a har. V'loki Yitzchak Shekasa Bo Sada Shanamar V'yetzei Yitzchak Lasuach Basada. Now, as far as Yitzchak is concerned, so he also davened in the area of the Mikdash, and he looked at it as a sada, as a field. Elik Yaakov Shikaru Bayis, but as far as Yaakov is concerned, he saw it as a house. Shenemer Vayikra Ishem HaMakom Ahu Beis El. Okay, so he saw it as a house. And his view of the Makom HaMikdash is the most enduring, and therefore the Navi Yishayahu, when describing that the Jews in gathering are all going to assemble at the Makom HaMikdash, so that's why it's called the Makom of the Beis Yitzchak. I'm sorry, Beis Yaakov. Okay, and obviously B'derech Drush. So this is a great opportunity. We're not going to take advantage of the opportunity, but it's a great opportunity to assign why exactly each of the Avos saw the Makom HaMikdash in the manner that they did. Why Avram saw it as a mountain, why specifically Yitzchak saw it as a field, why did Yaakov see it as a house? So it gives opportunity for that kind of drush, but we're going to go on in the Gemara. I'm Rav Yochanan Gadol Kibbutz Galios Kiyom Shenivru Bo Shamayim Va'aretz. Rav Yochanan says that as far as the day of Kibbutz Galios in gathering, it's going to be as significant, as important, as the day in which heaven and earth was created. Shemar, the pasuk says, "V'nig b'tzu b'nei Yehuda v'nei Yisrael yachdav v'sam lahem rosh echad v'alum min ha'aretz ki gadol yom Yisrael." So once again, our last return, our last foray into the first couple prakim of Hosea. So the Navi Hosea describes how there's going to be a kibbutz, an ingathering, and the Navi describes it as being v'sam lahem rosh echad. And when you hear the word echad, so what should you think of? So the Gemara immediately tells us what we should think. Uksiv ayi erev ayivoker yom echad. Okay, so that's the day of Brias Shamayim Va'aretz, and the day of Kibbutz Galus is going to be as significant. It's going to be as important. Okay, Adkan takes us now to the end of the Agadata. We are going back to our Mishnah. Let's quickly take a look back at our Mishnah. The first Mishnah here in the 8th parak of Psachim. Ha'isha b'zman shehi beveis ba'alam. Just reviewing the Mishnah. That when a woman is in the house of her husband, shachar la ba'ala v'shachar la aviyah tocha misha ba'ala. So again, she eats from her husband. And then the Mishnah goes on to say that if it's Shana Rishona, if it's the first year, it's the first Yontiv, so then she could choose between her father's Karban Pesach and her husband's Karban Pesach. The Mishnah then goes on to describe a yasom, an orphan. So an orphan who is right now, there were custodians appointed over his estate to basically take responsibility of the estate and also to take a responsibility of the yasom as well. And so now for that Karban Pesach in which the yasom is now under the custody of an apotropos, so let's say there are multiple apotropsim for a yasom. Okay, could it possibly be that there are multiple apotropsim? The answer seemingly is yes. And if, in fact, now you have multiple custodians and each one of them now is Shechen Karban Pesach on behalf of the Yasom, so the Mishnah says, Yochel B'makom Shehu Rotzeh. So the Yasom can now choose which one of the apotropsim that he wants to go to. The Gemara has a discussion that we also had yesterday, really briefly, and it's also going to be a really brief discussion. Although we're gonna lengthen discussion just a little bit because boys are an interesting tosus over here. We're gonna get to in just a moment. So the Gemara says Shamei Mena Yesh Beira. So the Gemara says, okay, once again, our Mishnah seems to be a referendum on whether or not we subscribe to Beira. Our Mishnah seems to indicate that we do subscribe to Beira because again, when is that decision of the Yasam being made? Presumably, it's being made after the shechting of the Karban Pesach. And if that's true, so that means that the shechting was not done over this child. And he was only choosing afterwards. And that decision that he made afterwards, retroactively, now goes back to the shechita. So once again, now it seems to indicate that yesh bera, that there is bera. And again, the Gemara wants to sidestep it because we know it's a machlokas and we know it's unresolved. And if there's any mission that speaks to it really clearly, so then it would never be an issue. So the Gemara says, Amar Rebbe Zera Sela Bayis Michamakom. So Rebbe Zera says, yes, that's true, but over here, the reason why we don't have to subscribe to Breira, and the truth of the matter is that there is no Breira, and the child's decision is really unimportant. Why? Because the Gemara has a drasha over here, Selabais Mikamakov. What does that mean? Rashi over here writes the following. I'm going to read the Rashi inside Selabais. Ish balabais yikachenu l'chol b'nei beso ve'in tzarech data. So, as far as Rashi's understanding of Rebbe Zera's answer, so the Pasuk Selabais tells us that as far as head of household is concerned, so he's going to get a sheep for the house. Meaning, and whoever are dependents in his house, they're automatically going to be attached to that sheep. Now, as far as the child's decision that he needs to participate as part of that sheep, so Rashi's understanding is just simply unnecessary. Selabais tells me that every dependent that's going to be in this house is immediately going to be attached to that carbon, and therefore you just simply don't need his decision altogether. Meaning, even though the Mishnah says he can eat from whoever he wants, sounding like it's a decision that he needs to make, it's not a decision that he needs to make because, as Rashi points out over here, his decision is simply unnecessary. You don't need their das. That's Rashi. Tosfos over here writes the following, second Tosfos on the Amud, Selabais Mikamakom. Perish mishum de selabais lav daraisa. Now, Tosfos gives a very different understanding of the Gemara other than Rashi. Tosfos' understanding is that this idea that you need the child, in this case, it's a yasam, but that you need a child's decision and you need his das, it's not even a din daraisa. And the Gemara Nadarm also speaks to this idea. So that means to say that the truth of the matter is that there is no minui over here, there is no registration over here. The child just simply is going to eat from the Karban Pesach even though he's unregistered. And then Tosfos goes on to say this as follows. Meaning it's just simply unnecessary. But not like Rashi. Rashi says it's unnecessary because automatically he's going to be attached to the Balabais. That's Rashi's understanding. But Tosfos' understanding is that no. In other words, with a child, it's just simply not applicable. It's not necessary. Meaning that the child can eat the Karban Pesach even without registration. Now, what does that mean? It means that the child is going to be eating Karban Pesach even though he's unregistered. And Tosfos says, well, if that's true, let's look at the next part of Tosfos. Really exciting, Tosfos. He writes, Vim Tamar, Vehech Mach L'Pesach Shalom Limnuyav. So now, what you are doing, meaning you, the owner of the Karban Pesach, is now you're going to be eating, giving this piece of the Karban Pesach, a kazayis of the Karban Pesach, over to this child who's unregistered, and he dekan ochel nevel, same based in Masuvin la'afrisha, l'saposlo b'yadayim. Now, from the perspective of the child, so he's not a bar das, and I know chinuch is an issue, but let's leave chinuch out of our discussion right now. You see a child who is eating nevela, so ain beisim mitzuvin la'afrisho beisim doesn't have to separate him. So once the child gets his hands on the Karban Pesach that he's not registered for, so that's not a problem. How can you give him a Karban Pesach and you're basically feeding him a carbon that he's not entitled to eat, meaning he's not registered? So and Tosus asked that question. Kedamra beperek cheresh, the Gemara in Yevamos discusses this point. The Omari da hasam yafinan miloso chlum velo asur ella dumi de shrotzim nevelos. So Tosus over here gives a really exciting answer, and he says like this: when it comes to the iser of that you're not allowed to feed iser to a child, so that is something that look not only is aser but also looks like iser as well. So like, let's say, for example, shrotzim and nevelos, right? So not only is it aser, but it looks like iser as well. So that's something that you're not allowed to feed a child. Aval ki hai gavna, de'ika chinuch mitzvah shari. So Tosfos says over here as follows. Yes, it's true that the child is not registered. And yes, it's true that you're normally not allowed to give Karban Pesach to someone who's not registered over it. On the other hand, however, over here there's a child. And over here, even though in this particular circumstance, it is aser for the child to eat it because he's not registered, but because in such a scenario, it looks like a mitzvah, and now there is an aspect of chinuch, because now the child is going to habituate himself to eating Karban Pesach on an annual basis. So as a result of that, says Tosos, it would be okay. Tosos is saying something which is really a chiddush. It's unbelievably creative and tremendous chiddush. And that is the idea that the only time that the Torah prohibits you feeding iser to a child is where not only is it aser, but also it looks like us, it looks like iser. And so therefore what you're going to be doing is you're going to be training the child to do something which is prohibited. On the other hand, when it comes to Karban Pesach, so even though in the current state where the child is not allowed to eat Karban Pesach because he's not registered over the Karban Pesach, and even though normally you're not allowed to feed iser to a child, but over here, the act in which you're doing actually looks like a mitzvah. And since it looks like a mitzvah, and therefore it follows the pattern of chinuch, so therefore you're allowed to feed the child the Karban Pesach despite the fact that he's not registered. That's Tosus's tremendous chiddush over here in our Gemara. And then, right, big discussion, but again, just highlighting the chiddush of Tosos. What do you do with that chiddush? Meaning, what kind of other applications can you go with that chiddush of Tosos? So that obviously is a big topic. Anyway, we're going to go back to the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. We're in Peches Amud Aleph. We're halfway down the Amud. Selabais Malamed. So over here now we are going to be focusing on this idea of who are going to be the dependents that are going to be included in your Karban Pesach. So, right, and it seems to be, by the way, that although Tosfos gives a really novel understanding of our Gemara, but the simple reading of our Gemara is really like Rashi. In other words, that when head of household checks the Karban Pesach, so by definition, all the dependents are going to necessarily be attached to that Karban Pesach. And Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara here quotes the Brisa, Selabais Malamid Shadam Evi V'Shochid Al Yedei. But no, Ubito HaKetanim, V'Al Yedei, Avdo V'Shivchaso HaKenanim. So as far as who automatically is going to be incorporated in that Karban Pesach that's shechted by the head of household, so his sons and daughters who are minors. His evidence, Shivcha Kananim, who are dependents, total dependents. They're owned by the owner. However, when you're talking about people who are adults and are a bar hachi, so, like, for example, your adult children. Like, for example, your Eved Ivri, your Amma Ivriya. Like, for example, your wife. So there, only Midatan. Only when you have their consent, then and only then, can you shech the Karban Pesach on their behalf. But without their das, you cannot shech on their behalf. Tanya Idach, the Gemara is going to quote another Braisa, which is basically going to repeat the same point. The only way that you can shech Karban Pesach for these adults is only with their consent. So the first part of this brisa is basically a repetition of what we saw in the previous brisa. However, here comes a new point in the second brisa. V'kulon sheshachtu v'shachar rabban alayen yotzim b'shel rabban. V'ein yotzim b'shel atzman. if, let's say, they shechted and their master shechted, so they're going to use the Karban Pesach of their master and not of their own. Chutz min isha sheichol limchos, with notable exception to the wife, because she could be mocha, she could protest. Okay, now, as far as the end of the brisa is concerned, so when we're talking about these people, if they're shechting a Karban Pesach on their own, and I know it's a fair question to ask, how is an Eved Kenani going to be getting a Karban Pesach on his own? But lo yitzu, had it been, and how can a katan, right, I'm just extending the question, and how can a katan get a Karban Pesach on his own? But if in the event that they do, and the head of household also were to shecht on their behalf, so then you default into the Karban Pesach of head of household. And then Mashna Isha, the Gemara's question over here is very simple. At the end of the Braisa, we said, with notable exception to the wife, because the wife can protest, meaning she doesn't automatically assume to be part and parcel of her husband's Karban Pesach. You need her consent. The Gemara says, what do you mean you need her consent? So don't you need, don't you also need the consent of your adult children? And don't you also need the consent of your Ivri and Amma Ivriya? So Amarava Isha V'chol D'damila. So Rava says, yeah, you're right. So that's Isha V'chol D'damila. Yeah, when we said wife, we mean, and anyone else who is in that category, meaning, and all the people who are independents. Hagufakashi, now the Gemara says, now in terms of a wife, so the Gemara says, I am a little bit confused because Amart, Chutz min Isha Sheichol Limchos, the wife can protest, meaning, where's the default position regarding the wife? So time of the machile. Halo machi nafka b'shal ba'ala. So we're going to assume that the default position of the wife is that she wants to be included in her husband's Karban Pesach. Okay, sounds intuitive. V'hakitani reisha. But if I read the Braisa really carefully, go back to the beginning of the Braisa, it said v'loi de'ishto alamidatan, that as far as the wife is concerned, so you need her consent, which sounds like, right, it sounds funny. Yeah, you're right. The wife has to sign some sort of consent form. Yes, I'd like to participate in my husband's Karban Pesach. Like, it sounds funny, but that's the reading of that seems to be the implication of the first half of the Braisa. Hastam alo nafke, which means that without a consent form, without a signed consent form, so your, my signed consent form, by the way, is a little bit of hyperbole on my part, but you understand. In other words, it sounds like she needs, you need her das. So my elamidatan. So, lav de amri in elabistama. So the Gemara says, okay, so, but what we'll do is we'll go back to the beginning of the Braisa, and we'll reinterpret the beginning of the Braisa. When it says midatan, it just simply means that we assume that she consents. So lafuke echad amar lo. So, and how do I know when she doesn't consent? It's very simple. When she says no. So the default of a wife is that she does want to participate and be included in her husband's Karban Pesach, but under normal circumstances. That's the default. But if she says no, that means she doesn't want to participate. So the Gemara says, okay, but again, I'll accept that, but it doesn't read that well into the Braisa. Because the Braisa, the second Braisa concluded that if they were to shecht and their master were to shecht over them, so generally speaking, they're going to be subsumed under the master's Karban Pesach, with exception to the wife because she could protest. Now, Amar Rava kem sheshachtu, ein lechamil emichu igado mizeh. So the Gemara, so Rava says, yeah, that's not difficult at all. Meaning, if the wife is shechting her own Karban Pesach, so that is a clear indication, right? If the husband's unable to understand that, so he really is not, he's not in tune with his wife, right? If she's shechting her own Karban Pesach, so that means that she is electing not to be included in her husband's Karban Pesach, and that's verbal articulation. Meaning she didn't verbalize it, but by her shechting on Karban Pesach, that is, of course, tantamount to her verbalizing it. Okay, so Adkan, that takes us now to the end of that sugya regarding who is automatically included in the Shechitas Karban Pesach when head of household does so, who is not automatically included, and where do we stand in terms of Stam? Good, very straightforward. I do want to highlight Rashi, which would like to take an opportunity just to point out the consistencies of Rashi here and elsewhere. Rashi, when describing Rashi Dibra Maska Al Yedei, when describing who necessarily is included in the Karban Pesach in terms of dependence, so Rashi says, I'm sorry, the Gemara said, your minor children. Rashi writes Al Yedei Bishvul Shebino Bidel Gatanim Alav Lechanchan. And Rashi writes over here that it is the father's responsibility to do chinuch. Hilkach be midatam dainu bestamak de mukla kamen be shlomi datam dami ein de amri lo ein yachol limchos. And that's why the children necessarily are going to be included in the father. So the key words of Rashi that I would like to highlight is alav lechanchan. Alav lechanchan, meaning that it is the father's responsibility to mechanech the child. The Rashi back in Brachos and Daf Mem Ches had a short discussion over there in terms of the mitzvah of chinuch. Is the mitzvah of chinuch on the father? Is the mitzvah of chinuch on the child? So Rashi and Tosfos over there debate. Rashi over there was really clear. The mitzvah of chinuch is on the parent. And Rashi over here, so consistent with that position of Rashi back in Brachos, Rashi writes over here, alav lechanchan. Okay, it's a, seems to be a correct diuk in Rashi. Okay, we're going to go back to the Gemara. We're going to continue the Gemara, Pechesim and Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud, Ramilei Rav Eina Saba, Eved Shal Shnei Shudfim. Ramilei Rav Eina Saba, Rav Nachman, Tanan. Eved Shal Shnei Shudfim, Lo Yochem Yishal Shneim. So we are going to go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that if you have an Eved and he had two owners, each one of them has a 50% share ownership in this Eved. So now this Eved on Karm Pesach, so he's going to be a little bit stuck. Right now, as we pointed out back in the Mishnah, that if each of the owners basically say to each other, okay, right, you'll take him this year or I'll take him this year, that's fine. But if there is no, communication between the two owners, so the Eved Kenani cannot eat by either Karban Pesach. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Good. Meanwhile, Vatani, we have a Braisa, Ratzim Mizeh Ochel, Ratzim Mizeh Ochel. And now in a Braisa, it says that the Eved Kenani can go to whichever owner he wants. He can go to one of the partners, he can go to the other partner. So Amarle, Enasabi, if Amarle, Pasya Uchma. So Rav Eina Saba asks the question to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman turns around, and he's got some nicknames for Eina Saba. So he describes him as Eina Saba. He describes him as Pasya Uchma, literally a black pot. We're missing a lot of the contextual clues in terms of understanding that nickname. Anyway, the Rashi, not here. But Rashi in other places goes on to describe what the significance of that nickname is. But anyway, Mini Uminach, between the two of us, Tistayim Shmaitata. We can come to an understanding of the Mishnah and the Braisa and create synthesis between the two. Masnisim b'dekapde and ahadadi Braisa delokapde ahadadi. It's very simple. As far as the Mishnah is concerned, so these two owners are makbid one on the other. The way Rashi describes it over here, hakpada, over here means like this. Meaning each one of the owners owns 50% share of the Eved Kenani, which means that they get the 50% benefit, but they also have the 50% responsibility of feeding the Eved Kenani. Now, when Hakpad over here explains Rashi, means that each of the owners basically does not want to benefit from the other owner. Meaning, for Karban Pesach, I don't want you to feed him because it's my responsibility, not my full responsibility, but it's partially my responsibility. And I don't want, for Karban Pesach, I don't want you to take the full load of that. So they're mocking each other. They don't want to get benefit from one another. That's Rashi's understanding, and that's the Mishnah. That's why it's funny, because of their hakpara, now it puts the Eved Kenani in a tough spot where he can't eat either of the Karban Pesachs. Fine, that's the Mishnah. Now, as far as the Braisa is concerned, they're not makbid on one another. Meaning, what do you want to do? You want to take him? You want to take our Eved Kenani for this Pesach and feed him? Go ahead. I'm good with it. I'm fine. That's the Braisa, and that's why in the Braisa scenario, so the Eved Kenani can eat from either of the owners Karban Pesach. And now we are up to the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah's last scenario is you have somebody who is in half Eved, half Ben Chorin. He was owned by two partners, one of the partners freed him. And so now this person is a most unusual position in life where his status is bifurcated. He has half of him being a slave, half of him being a free man. And the Mishnah says, as far as Karban Pesach is concerned, so where does that leave him? Also in a really tough spot. Lo yochel mishal rabo. The Mishnah says that he can't eat his master's Karban Pesach, because even though the 50% of him that belongs to his master, so obviously his master has that included, but what the master does not have by default, meaning without clear articulation, is the 50% of him that's free. Meaning the 50% of him free wasn't invited to the Karban Pesach. So right, it's unusual. This person literally has a split persona, not split personality, but he has a split persona. So for the 50% of him that's free, so if he gets a formal invitation, yes, you are now registered over our Karban Pesach, so that's great. His own portion gets to eat, and his and his free portion gets to eat. But now that he didn't receive that invitation, so his own portion is going to be included in the owner's Karban Pesach, but not his free portion, and therefore he can't eat of the owner's Karban Pesach. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Now, Mishal Rabbahu Delo Yocha V'Mishal Atzma Yocha. Now, a simple diuk of the Mishnah is that if he shechted Karban Pesach on his own, that he can eat. Now the Braisa over here is abundantly clear. The Braisa says that this Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin can't eat any Karban Pesach, not his own Karban Pesach, not his own Karban Pesach. Okay, so the Mishnah and the inference of the Mishnah is going against the Braisa. So Lo Kasha Kan Kimishnah Rishona Kan Kimishnah Achrona. If you've been around the Gemara long enough, you'll know that this answer was coming. This answer, which is repeated throughout Shas, you can see the side of the Gemara. Chagiga, Gittin, Baba Basra, Erchin, Adios. So this comes up numerous times, and that is Mishnah Rishona, Mishnah Achrona. Now, as we're going to see in just a moment, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai have a debate in terms of what exactly to do with this person who's in the state of being a split persona, being Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. Let's see the Mishnah inside. Misha Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin over this Rabbi Yomechad Ves Atzmo Yomechad Divrei Beis Hillel. So Beis Hillel's original position, hence the Mishnah Rishona, is that for our Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to take the six-day work week. I know we Americans are trained that it's 5 days. But you take the six-day work week, and you're going to divide into half. That's 3 days, 3 days. So for 3 days, so this Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin is going to work for his master. For the other 3 days, he's going to work for himself. Good. And as far as Shabbos is concerned, he's going to rest, as he's instructed to do by the Torah. And Beis Shammai Omrim, so Beis Shammai says, look, not a good solution. We're now in the top of the Amud Beis. Takantem es Rabba v'asatzmolo takantem. That's wonderful. So as far as solving for the owner, so you did a great job for solving for the remaining owner. However, for our Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, so you put him in an impossible position. Lisa Shivcha ino yechol shekvar chetzio ben chorin. So he cannot marry a Shivcha Kananis because half of him is free. And the Torah says in Parshas Kiseitze, Rashi here quotes it, Lo ye kadesh, and look at the Targum over there, Rashi quotes it, Lo yasev isasa ama. A man is not allowed to marry a Shivcha Kananis. And so therefore the free part of him, which is a full-fledged Jew, is not allowed to marry Shivcha Kananis. Had he been still a full Eved Kanani, so of course he's allowed to marry Shivcha Kananis, but over here he can't, because half of him is free. Now, Lisa, Bas Chorin, Enu Yochol Shadayin Chetzio Eved. Now, as far as marrying a Jewish woman, well, half of him is an Eved Kanani, so he cannot marry a full-fledged Jewish woman. So now, what are his options in terms of who he can marry? And the options are no, nobody. And now Yivatel. And now, so what are you left to say? Okay, so we won't get married. So the Gemara says that's untenable. V'alolo nivra olam ela l'pirivya. You know the world was created for the purposes of pirivya. Shenemar. Gemara quotes from Sefer Yeshayahu lo so bara l'sheves yitzara. The world was not created to be desolate, but rather to be populated. So the mitzvah pirivu. So the purpose of the mitzvah pirivu is for population. Right? One of those examples where by the combination, putting together the mitzvah of the Torah together with the psukim and navi, so we now know tama mitzvah. Meaning there's a mitzvah puruvu. Why is there a mitzvah puruvu? So as 99% of the time in the Torah, so the Torah doesn't give us a reason. Right? Off the top of my head, right? Gidon Asher. So the Torah gives us a reason behind Gidon Asher, right? Yaakov, the fight with the angel. So good. So that's but most of the time, the vast majority of the time, the Torah doesn't give the reasons behind the mitzvah. But over here, when it comes to the mitzvah puruvu, so you have a pasuk in Chumash, right? And then on top of that, you also have the pasuk in Yeshayahu. The pasuk in Yeshayahu says, what's the reason behind the mitzvah puruvu? To populate the world. So you see over here that the whole purpose of creation is to populate the world. So elamim neitikin olam. So kofin is rabba voso so ben chorin v'kosif shara chesi damav. So Beit Shammai says, so here's what you're going to have to do now. So what you're going to do now is that you're going to force, you're going to compel the remaining owner to free his portion. Obviously, he's going to be compensated. If the Eved Kanani does not have the money to pay, so you just simply write up an IOU, hand it over to the remaining owner. So now he's going to be owed the money, but now our Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, so his Chatzi Avdus is now going to be freed, and now he's going to be able to get married. Now you can't solve the other direction, because once you're a full-fledged Jew, you can't go back to becoming and Neve Kenani. So the only solution now is going to be to compel the remaining owner to free him. And so Beis Shammai made an outstanding point. V'chazer Beis Hillel lowers to Beis Shammai. And one of those circumstances where Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, you know what, you're right. You're right. And we're going to retract our position. And we're gonna agree with you. That's Mishnah Achrona, meaning that's Beis Hillel in their redacted viewpoint. Good. So that is the when the Mishnah says that he can't eat from his own Karban Pesach, but the inference of the Mishnah is that he can eat his own Karban Pesach. Yeah, because that's Mishnah Achrona. Our Mishnah over here is mirroring the position of Mishnah Achrona, which is basically at this point in time, compulsion is done to the remaining owner, where he's going to free him. So therefore, basically, he's a free man. Mashain came when the Brisa says that he cannot eat his own as he cannot eat his own, it's because the Brisa was mimicking the Mishnah Rishona, Beis Hillel's original position, where he's stuck in the state of being Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. As far as Tosfos over here, I'm not going to do it now, but there's a lot of really interesting discussions in Tosfos regarding this state of being a Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. There's a Tosfos on the bottom of the previous Amud. There's a Tosfos also on the top of the Amud Beis. One thing I will point out, just from Tosfos, the Im Tamar, top Tosfos over here, third line down, Amai Kofin, V'chiyomer lo ladam chatei, b'shvil sheyizke chavero, demishachar avda over basei. So Tosfos over here asks a question. Freeing your Eved Kenani is an Isser Asay. The Pasuk says, La'olam de Bahem Tavodu, that when you have an Eved Kenani, they're going to be working for you indefinitely. That's a Mitzvah Asay. Freeing them would be a violation of that Asay. So, right, in the yeshivas, we call it an Isser Asay. So under those circumstances, so why, how can you tell the remaining owner to free him in violation of Asay? And yes, it's true, you're going to get a positive benefit from that, i.e., he can get married now, but it's an issur to free him. V'yesh lomar, so Tosfos over here writes, mitzvah rabba shani de lo tober ala shevet yitzara. Kedem shani gabi rebel azu sheshichar avdo, mitzvah de rabim shani. So Tosfos over here cites the Gemara Brachos, right? Earlier this morning, we cited the Gemara Brachos mem ches. Now, we're citing the Gemara Brachos mem zayin. Okay, back to back. So, and the Gemara Brachos mem zayin, we all know, so Rebbe Lazar was in need of a minyan, and so he had nine, he had the Eved Kenani, he freed the Eved Kenani in order to make a minyan. And the Gemara's language over there is mitzvah derabim. Now, in terms of the girsa of the Gemara over there, mitzvah derabim, mitzvah rabba. But anyway, but Tosfos says over here that the same thing is true over here. Just like over there, mitzvah of making a minyan is mitzvah derabim. It's right, it's a communal mitzvah. And so, therefore, it's going to be overriding the Isser. So over here as well, the mitzvah peruvu, it's a major mitzvah. And Tosfos says, and how do I know that? Because lo tobara, because of the pasuk in Yeshayahu. And again, speaks to this idea that this is one of those rare exceptions where we know what the Tama mitzvah is. The Navi tells us what the Tama mitzvah is. And because now it is a mitzvah that that both were compelled, we understand the significance of that mitzvah. Creation was done so that the world would be populated. So therefore, this is one of those things now where the Isser Aseh is going to bend for the mitzvah peruvu, for the mitzvah peruvu. Okay, right. And I just scratched the surface of Tosfos over here. There are a number of really interesting points that Tosfos goes over, specifically the one on the bottom of the previous Amud. We're going to continue, however, we are now up to the Mishnah. Mishnah continues, Amar la'avdo sefer shachor alai es ha-Pesach. So let's say now the owner says to his Eved, okay, I'm going to give you very clear instructions. You're going to take an animal, you're going to bring it to the base of Mikdash, and you're going to shept. And it just has to be Karban Pesach. Now we know that there are two animals that are eligible to be brought as a Karban Pesach, either a sheep or a goat. And so the owner did not give instructions to his Eved which animal to bring. So Shacha Gedi Yochal, Shacha Tle Yochal. So whether or not the Eved elected to use either a goat or a sheep, whichever one, so fine. The Gemara is going to ask, what's the Chiddush? Meaning it seems to be pretty obvious. The Gemara is going to ask that question. Shacha Gedi Vitle Yochal Min HaRishon. Now let's say he brings two Karban Pesachs. He brings a Gedi and a Tle. So whichever one was shechted first, so that's going to be assumed to be the Karban Pesach. We're going to discuss that also in just a moment from now. Shachach ma amar lo rabo. So now let's say our Eved gets to the Beis HaMikdash and his owner gave him really clear instructions of which animal to shecht. And the owner said, either a Gedi or a Tle. And now when the Eved gets to the Beis HaMikdash, the Eved has totally forgotten what were the instructions, but he knows that there was a hakpada about one type. So Ketzah Yasa Yishchot Telev Gedi V'yomrim Gedi Amar Li Rabbi Gedi Shalo V'Telev Shali V'im Telev Amar Li Rabbi HaTelev Shalo U'Gedi Shali. So you just simply bring both animals with the Tanai. The Tanai is that if my owner wanted the Gedi, so if I find that'll be belong to him and the other one will belong to me. If my owner wanted the Telev, so then the Telev will be for him and the Gedi will be for me. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. If we're talking about Neve Kanani over here, Mashakan Neve Kanaraba. So he can own a carbon on his own. So how does this tonight work? The Gemara is going to ask that question as well. Shachach Rabba Ma Amar Lo. So now, let's say we have the following scenario. That is that at the time of instruction, the Rebbe was really clear, the master was really clear what he wanted. And the Evan, when he went to bring carbon Pesach, he forgot. He knew there was a Kpada, but he forgot. And now he's going to bring both with the Tanai. Then he comes back with the owner, and he's like, okay, so I forgot which one you told me. I brought a Gedi and Teleh. I made the Tanai, so you tell me which one you want. And the owner says, well, that's funny. Not only is your memory failing you, but my memory is failing me as well. I also remember I told you which one, but I forgot as well. So what do you do under those circumstances? Shneim yasul beisas reifa, u'pitur melasus pesach sheni. So they are, both animals are now going to have to be disposed of. We don't know which one's which, and we can't just simply have each one of them eating, because for each one of them, the other carbon is going to be eino manu. It's going to be an unregistered carbon. And you're not allowed to eat an unregistered carbon. So therefore, there is simply no solution. They both must be disposed of. And the owners are going to be exempt. Each one of them is going to be exempt from Pesach Sheni. And there's a little bit to discuss in our Mishnah. So let's start with the Gemara this morning. Pshita. Shacha gidi yochel afagav deraga butleh. So let's add a little bit of Chiddush in our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, yeah, well, that's what we're going to do. So if the owner said, you'll shech the carbon Pesach, and he's not specific, and the Eved took it upon himself to shech a Gedi, so that's the carbon Pesach. What's the Chiddush there? So the Gemara's response is that generally speaking, when given the choice of eating either sheep or goat, so the owner normally eats sheep. So even though he wasn't clear in the instructions, but habit is a hard thing to break, and the Evan knows what his owner likes, so maybe you can assume that the owner wanted specifically sheep, even though he didn't include that in the instructions. That's what you could have argued, and that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. That because the owner was not specific, so therefore it doesn't matter. So, Shachat Tla Yochel Afagavde, Derago Begidi, and we're going to go in the other direction as well. Meaning that if the Evan shechted a sheep and the owner typically eats goat, so still, because the owner was not specific in his instruction, so therefore, the sheep will be just fine. Shacha gedi v'tileh yochel min harishon, v'hatanya ein nimnim al shnei pesachim ke'echad. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. The next point of the mission where you're bringing both animals, the gedi and tileh, so, and they're both going to be the karm pesach, what do you mean? You can register over two karm pesachs. So masisim b'melchum malka. So the Gemara says like this. No. And I'm sorry, before we get to the Gemara's answer. Let me be even clearer about the Gemara's question over here, with the help of Rashi, of course. So Rashi writes over here, "Einimnan al shnei pesachim keechad lecho b'shas achila me'echan mehem." Meaning, here's what you can't do: you can't just simply throw up there two animals and say, "Look, they're both going to be my karban pesach. I'll decide later." And why? The ein breira. So Rashi over here connects us back to the discussion of breira. V'chibay lamechol doma b'shas shchita lo havedaitei aleha. And look, only one of them is going to be your Karban Pesach. And if Breira doesn't work, we don't know which one. And therefore, the one that you're eating right now may be the one that you're not registered over. Hilkach, Rashi writes, Lo acha v'zeshi hiniach. Sorry. V'zeshi himnes rabo shnei pesachim v'rabo samachala heichecho min harishon. So now, you appointed your Eved to go offer Karban Pesach. Your Eved offered two animals. And now, what's the story? Story is that, whichever one's first. What do you mean whichever one's first? In other words, one of them belongs to the owner, and it could very well be that the owner had in mind one of the two, we don't know which one, and Breira will not be able to determine. So now, the Brisa tells us that you're not allowed to eat either of the carbons. And the Mishnah sounds like, well, whichever one you shech first is going to be good. So the Gemara's explanation, Masisim b'melchum malka. As far as our Mishnah is concerned, our Mishnah is talking about a king and a queen. Now, as Rashi explains over here, I'll say the Rashi outside, a king and a queen, it would just simply mean people who have means, right? Wealthy people. And now wealthy, as far as wealthy people is concerned, so they know that what they're going to be served that night is going to be an exquisite meal. exactly what they're going to be eating, whatever, you're right, they are not makbid by virtue of the fact that they're living in luxury, and they'll eat whatever delicacies are going to be served in front of them. And so for them, literally, they're not makbid. V'hatanya, the Gemara here now is quoting this brisa. This brisa is benichusa, right? It says support. So here we have a scenario in which you have a king and a queen. They tell their avadim shech karm pesach. They bring two karm pesachs and they ask the king, which one do you want? Amalem lechu v'shalu samalka. So he says, don't ask me, ask the queen. And the queen says, well, why are you asking me? Ask Rabbi Gamliel. They ask Rabbi Gamliel, and his response is, Malka, umelech datan kala alehem. As it relates to a king and a queen, so you know, datan kala alehem. Literally, their minds are light. It means that they're not makpid. They really don't care. So yochlum and arishon. So whichever one's first, that's going to be the Karban Pesach. So, anan, lo nocha, lo min arishon, v'lo min hasheni. But as far as we're concerned, for us, it's a big deal. Shechting a sheep, shechting a goat is a big deal. And we don't have the luxuries that the melech and malka have, and so therefore, for us, it's going to be an issue. So basically, now we've given psha in our mishnah when we have a scenario in which, the master gives to, deputizes his Eved Kanani to go ahead and bring Karban Pesach, and he brings two animals. And now he comes back with the two animals. So which one? So the Mishnah says first. What do you mean first? It could have been the other animal. So our Mishnah is talking about Melech Malka, which is funny, by the way, because then our Mishnah is really limited in its, in its audience, right? Our Mishnah is only talking about a king and a queen. It's not talking about anybody else. All right. That is a little bit strange, but that's the explanation of the Mishnah. But under normal circumstances for you and I, meaning to offer two animals and just simply afterwards to say which one we wanted, well, that relies on Breira, and we don't subscribe to Breira, and therefore it won't work. Okay, we talked about how Rabbi Gamliel saved the day. The Gemara is going to give us now one other story where this, in fact, took place. There was a lizard. A lizard over here, one of the Shemona Shvatzim. That was found in the shlak house. So here, same sequence of events. They ask the king what to do. He says, I don't know, ask the queen. They ask the queen what to do. She says, what are you asking me for? This is a halachic question. Go to Rabbi Gamliel. So they ask Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel says, could you just give me some more information? One of the Shemona Shvatzim that you found, was boiled up in hot water or cold water? Amar lo roseach. So he says, well, he was boiled up in hot water. Now remember, as basic rules of Tumah Sheretz is concerned, it's only metame after it's dead, not while it's alive. So Amar lehem, so Rabbi Gamliel says, I got some good advice. L'chu v'itilo aleim koshel tzonin. Pour cold water over what seems to be the dead lizard. Halchu v'itilo aleim koshel tzonin. And that's what they do. They poured water right over the cold lizard. Started moving around, meaning the animal wasn't dead. Animal was alive, just shocked by the heat. So he revived it with cold water. Vitar Rabban Gamliel kol ha'suda kula. Rabban Gamliel was matar the suda. Now the word matar over here, not to be understood like literally he was matar, meaning there was no tumah to begin with, meaning the lizard was alive all along. So nimsa melech talu b'malka, v'nimsa malka taluya b'Rabban Gamliel. Now as far as the king is concerned, so he yielded to the queen. As far as the queen was concerned, she yielded to Rabban Gamliel. Nimseis kol ha'suda taluya b'Rabban Gamliel. Now it comes out that the entire meal is resting on the shoulders of Rabban Gamliel. Good. Rabban Gamliel saved the day. Okay. In just a moment, we're about to start the next piece of Gemara. I'll just highlight once again, not the first time we're going to make this point, going to highlight once again this idea of Rabban Gamliel and Karban Pesach. Rabban Gamliel, so he seemingly from our Gemara, it sounds like he partook of Karban Pesach. Now, the problem with that, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, is that Rabbi Gamliel lived after Churban Bayis Sheni. And so the idea that he partook of the Karban Pesach, so that is a really curious idea. Go back to Ayin Dalet, right? Beginning of the seventh parak. Where there, that first mission, the beginning of the seventh parak. So, Maisa Rabbi Gamliel, Shamar Latevi Avdut, Sevet Sal Alanu as the Pesach, Al Haskala. So I want you to roast the Karban Pesach on metal grates. Okay, if you remember back to the beginning of the seventh parak, where we discussed the roasting, the method in which you roast Karban Pesach. But anyway, Rabbi Gamliel is over there giving instruction to have Shach Karban Pesach. Our Gemara over here talking about the question about how to eat Karban Pesach with Rabbi Gamliel. So there are already a lot of hard pieces of evidence here in our Masechta that Rabbi Gamliel ate Karban Pesach, and the question which I asked back in the beginning of the seventh parak, I'll reiterate the question again: how is he doing that after Chorban Bayis Sheni? Okay, sorry for not giving satisfying answers, but anyway, but the question is really strong. Shachach Masha Amalo Rabbo. So we'll just do one more bit of Gemara over here, and then we'll pause. We'll continue tomorrow, and that is that. Let's say the owner gave instructions to his Eved, this is what you're going to shecht. And he gave very clear instructions in terms of whether or not it should be a goat or a sheep. And now when the Eved gets to the Beis HaMikdash, he forgot. So what he should do is he should bring both a goat and a sheep, and he should make it tonight. So whichever one my master wanted, so that's the one I'm going to give him. The other one I'll keep for myself. And the Gemara here asks a question, which I foreshadowed back in the Mishnah. Shalim ha-shekana Eved kana rabo. So how can you have now this Eved Kanani taking ownership of something? He can't take ownership of something. So So over here, the solution will come in the following manner. What the Eved's going to do is he's going to go to a shepherd who normally supplies animals to his master. And in other words, he knows the family, and obviously he's going to go about it. He's going to do a transaction in a manner that will be effective to everybody. And what he's going to do is he's going to make a kinyan to the Eved to the exclusion of his master. Now, obviously, you could do that. In other words, the default position is that anything that the Eved acquires is going to go to the owner. But if somebody wants to make a kinyan to the Eved to the exclusion of the owner, so he could do that. Okay, how exactly that works? Good. I'm not perfectly clear on that, but it works. So you go to a shepherd that is ready to make such an arrangement. And again, the shepherd knows the family and he wants to obviously solve for this problem. And so the shepherd will do that. Under those circumstances, but only under those limited circumstances, will this method be an effective way to solve for the problem. Okay, Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up at the two dots. In the meantime, however, let's review our daf today. Continuing from yesterday's daf, gave five reasons why we were sent into Galus Bavel. And over here, this morning, we started with the last two reasons. One is because we return back to our motherland, or really our fatherland. Avram Avinu comes from Bavel. So when we were shipped out of Eretz Yisrael, we went back to Avram Avinu's hometown. And there are a number of things that went back to its source. The Jewish people went back to its source, as we described. The money of Mitzrayim went back to Mitzrayim. The Ksav Luchos went back up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, up to Shemayim. Good. That is the fourth explanation. The fifth explanation is that we go to Bavel. There is the cost of living over there is really low. It's easy to live in Bavel, and therefore we're going to be able to spend more time dedicated to the study of Torah. And by the way, just in other words, we could say this in historical retrospect, meaning and mission accomplished, meaning look what we're learning right now. We're learning Talmud Bavli. So obviously, we are in fact benefiting from the design, the plan of going to Bavel, so that eventually it would become an epicenter of Torah. The Gemara then treated us to a couple of other bits of Agadata regarding the position of Rabbi Lazar, that the Pasuk in Hosea, when describing that, we're going to go back to Beis Hashem. The Navi describes Beis Elokei Yaakov. And each one of the Avos looked at the Makom HaMikdash from a different perspective. Avram looked at it like a mountain. Yitzchak looked at it as a field. And Yaakov looked at it as a house, which is permanent. It's a permanent structure. And that obviously is going to be the enduring view of the Makom HaMikdash. Also, in terms of Kibbutz Galios, it's going to be like Bria Sa'olam. Okay, and that ended our Gadic section of this morning's daf. Then, Pechesem and Aleph. So once again, we dipped our toe into the topic of Breira, where the Mishnah says that when you have the Yasom, so he can choose which one of the custodians he's gonna be eating Karban Pesach by. How can he do that? Isn't that gonna be a reliance on Breira? So the Gemara gives the answer, Reb Zera's answer, Seh Labais Mikom Makom. And I spent a good amount of time, I spent a little bit of time this morning going through Rashi's understanding of that answer and going through Tosus's understanding of that answer. And Tosus comes up with a really novel idea regarding even if the child is unregistered and even though you're not allowed to eat from an unregistered Karban Pesach, but as far as the child is concerned, it's not a big deal because even though for him it's an Isser, but it's an Isser that looks like a mitzvah. And therefore, the chinuch that's involved is going to be able to override the iser. Okay, a really novel idea by Tosos. Good. So, and I spent a little bit of time with that Tosos. As far as the Gemara is concerned, the Gemara continued to describe who are going to be default dependents, who are going to be participating in the Karban Pesach, minor children, and Eved Kenani, Shifcha Kenanis. But when it comes to your adult children, when it comes to your Eved Ivriya, Ama Ivriya, and when it comes to your wife, so there, they're not automatically subsumed under your Karban Pesach, and you need their consent. What is the default position of the wife? Is she consenting automatically, or does she actually have to sign a consent form? And the Gemara's response, the Gemara's conclusion over there is that the default is stama. She wants to participate in her husband's Karban Pesach. The Gemara on the bottom of Peches and Aleph goes over two more scenarios of our Mishnah. What happens if I have an Eved that's owned by Shnei Shutfim? Our Mishnah says that Eved cannot participate in either Karban Pesach. The Brisa says that he can go whichever one he wants. And the Gemara's resolution is that our Mishnah is talking about where they're makbid one on the other, and the Brisa is where they're not makbid one on the other. The Gemara ended off by, on the bottom of the Amud, talking about the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. The Mishnah says that he can't eat his owners, his half owners, or his halves, who's owned by the owner's Karban Pesach, but he can eat his own Karban Pesach. And meanwhile, the Brisa says, no, he can't eat his owner's Karban Pesach, and can't eat his own Karban Pesach. And the Gemara points out that the difference between the Mishnah and the Brisa is the difference between Mishnah Rishona, Mishnah Achrona. And then we started the new Mishnah on Peches Amud Beis. The Mishnah says that the owner goes to Zeva Kanani, deputizes him to Shech Karban Pesach, and if he shechs either a Gedi or a Tleh, so then whichever one he shechs will be acceptable. And the Gemara introduces a Chiddush, even though typically the owner likes the other one. However, if the owner is specific about which one he wants, so then you have to bring the one that he wanted. If he brought two animals and the owner did not specify, so you eat the first of the two animals as the Karban Pesach. How does that work? So the Gemara went on to explain that's talking about a case of Melech Umalka. People of significant means, and they really don't care which one it is. Under those circumstances, the first one will be the Karban Pesach. The Gemara told us a story with Rabbi Gamliel where Rabbi Gamliel said exactly this psak. And Rabbi Gamliel also saved the Karban Pesach from being tameh, as he basically resuscitated a lizard. And the last question that we dealt with is that if the owner specified which one he wanted, either Gedi or Tleh, the Eved forgot. The Eved basically brought two animals, a Gedi and a Tleh, made a Tanai. And the Tanai was, whichever my owner wanted, that'll go to the owner, and the other one will be retained by me. And the Gemara's question, how can he retain anything? He's an Eved Kanani, Mashkana Eved Kanarabo. And the Gemara's answer is that the shepherd who knows the family, who wants to solve for the problem. So under those circumstances, he goes to a shepherd that's going to make a kinyan specific to him to the exclusion of the owner. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here.